Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Teachings of the Buddha, it's quite often described two streams of consideration. One is what we call conventional truth or conventional reality, and the other is liberation truth or transcendent truth, transcendent reality. So in conventional truth, that's where we're defined as social beings, with our various kinds of responsibilities and relationships. And so I am Erdamo, I am a Buddhist monk, I am the senior monk here, my brother lives in Ottawa. I have a personal history. My parents come from Latvia. My teacher lives in Thailand, and so on and so forth. So these are the conventions of individuality that each one experiences in a different way. And within that, and within those conventions, the teaching talks about how to live our lives on a social level, how to live our lives in a way where we and do good, refrain from doing harm. So we're encouraged to live in a way of non-violence, in a way of fidelity, in a way of sobriety, in a way of not being corrupt, using language which does not divide or hurt other people, communicating in ways which are compassionate, living up to our responsibilities, caring for the planet, expressing ourselves through art or through service or both, or whatever ways we express ourselves, being responsible to our children and parents, and that's the kind of conventions that we all live by. So the stress there is on moral integrity, social responsibility, doing good, refrain from doing harm. That's where we talk about the precepts. That's where we talk about, say, in our monastic life, the rules that we keep, the etiquettes that we keep, the shared social norms that, say, we as monastics have. So, for instance, even though I'm the senior monk, if I decided that, say, our old tractor, we don't need it anymore, and I gave it away, that would be an offense. Offense to the Sangha, because I can't just give Sangha property away. It's not mine to give, even though I'm the senior monk. So that's the kind of conventions that we live by. We call that the Vinaya. Lay conventions are more generally described in Buddhism, so five precepts, responsibility to parents and children, and such like. So that's a big piece, just living a good life, being a good human being, do the best I can not to harm other beings, taking care of my folk and myself. And the other way we talk about looking at life, considering life, is what's called vimutti satya, or that kind of way of liberation, where we no longer look at life as a social convention, where I'm here and you're there, but we try to look at life as more like a stream of consciousness. As a set of phenomena that are coming and going in consciousness, and both are true. So like the convention of I am the senior monk, it's true, and I have responsibilities, and I'm, you know, I sit senior, and I have first shot at the ice cream. When I was a junior monk, I had last shot at the ice cream, usually didn't get it. So that's conventional truth. But then in terms of stream of consciousness, what comes up is maybe like or dislike or being pressured by the sense of being having a lot of responsibility or really liking responsibility. It's just a stream of consciousness within individuality is the set of events that I'm experiencing. And in Buddhist teaching, we're asked to live by both of those conventions, to live well in society, but also to be aware of the inner movement of consciousness and to develop an understanding of why we suffer and how to go beyond suffering, what creates suffering in our minds and how to go beyond that. And if we don't have that inner reflective capacity, then of course we're just victims of circumstance. So when circumstances are good and harmonious, we feel great, and when they fall apart, we feel perturbed. So this capacity is obviously developed in meditation. When we sit and we observe the mind, we observe like discomfort or wanting the sitting to end, or feeling very peaceful or not peaceful, having memories coming and going. We're very much developing the second kind of awareness, not just as a social convention, but as a flow of consciousness, flow of conscious events. And we're trying to do that all the time. So there's a kind of inner vigilance we're practicing. And we all do that. Otherwise, I mean, if we didn't do that, we'd be crazy. You know, we'd just be reacting all the time. So we all do that to a certain extent. And in Buddhism, it's just encouraged in a very, very rigorous way to really be attentive to how flow of consciousness is operating. So the language in like conventional truth, the truth of who I am as an individual in my social situation, is a language where we use viradhammo or I. So I have an appointment Monday, or I was born in 1947, or I spoke with Philip on the phone yesterday. So the sense of I. And then you identify me as Ajahn Viradhammo and as the senior monk, and you, and so on and so forth. But then, in this other way of looking at our experience, we try to look at things more as conscious events which are dependently originated. So we have this teaching called dependent origination, and I spoke about that. I think I've been speaking about it on and off now for a couple of weeks, and the idea here is to observe life not just as a set of ego circumstances, but as a sense of as a series of phenomenal events, mental events, sights, sounds, tastes, bodily feelings, smells, mental events, emotions, reactions, memories, obsessions, all that movement that we call the mind and body. And in that kind of consideration, the Buddha suggests that we begin to perceive things in a different way than I am Viradhammo, and I was born in 1947. The convention here is more like the simplest formulation of what we call dependent origination is this being that comes to be with the arising of this that arises. This not being that does not come to be with the cessation of this that ceases. So that's a function, that's an organizational principle in nature. So switch on this being. Okay, here you go. Demonstration. This being that comes to be, cessation of this, that ceases. Okay? With the arising of this, that arises. With the ceasing of this, that ceases. Hey, this is cool. I've never done that before. But you get the principle, right? So it's a principle. It's a principle in nature. And it's going on all the time, right? So it's not just mechanical, it's also emotional, psychological. So let's say with humidity as condition, Like if you're very troubled by humidity and heat, then with humidity as condition, there is exhaustion that comes to be. Without humidity, with the cessation of humidity, the cessation of exhaustion. So there's a very personal part of it too. And this is a structural principle which exists in nature. It's just very, very natural. And so replacing a sort of self-referencing to a more kind of referencing to the flow of nature. So with what is condition is there suffering? Yeah. With what is condition is suffering? And with what is condition is there the cessation of suffering? And that's a very important, obviously it's a very important existential question which we ask ourselves, because as long as we're suffering, we're going to be trying to get out of it. We're trying to be free from suffering. So that question is inherent in our desire to be happy, in our desire to be fulfilled. And so that kind of structural principle, we try to. You can see when you apply that principle. I get irritated at someone. If I take it personally, I might have personal responsibility. So let's say someone is living in the monastery and they always come late to morning meetings. Right? So the social principle or the conventional principle is, because I'm the senior monk, I have to train them. I say, listen, if you want to be here, you have to come on time. Okay, that's conventional speech. But also the inner movement of consciousness is that I might be irritated, I might be annoyed, I might not want to be bothered, or whatever. So then I use that principle with this person late, this being, that comes to be. My heart feels irritated. This being, that comes to be. And you see, now I'm not so much taking it personally as seeing it something about the flow of nature. This being, that comes to be. With the arising of this, that arises. This person being late, that annoyance arises in the heart. With this as condition, there's this annoyance. With the cessation of that, there's the cessation of this. With the cessation of, when the person comes on time, there's the cessation of annoyance. Or memory. I remember the person always came in late, and then I go back to my kuti, and memory comes up now, because she's been doing it for maybe, keeps doing it and doesn't listen to me, something like that, and I'm getting irritated. So, now memory. So the memory comes up, this being, and the same annoyance is there. That comes to be. With arising, if that arises. Now, if I'm not careful, as the annoyance arises, I start to think annoying thoughts. And that's what we call birth. Birth not in terms of a birth from a womb, but birth in terms of conscious sense of self, conscious sense of like ego, what we call ego, and so on. So, with memory as condition, there's a sense that what arises in my mind is, that idiot. You know, we feed them and they just come late and no one respects me and I work hard in the meditation cushion and blah, blah, blah. The mind goes off into resentment, whatever. And so with this as condition, that arises. And then maybe there's a noticing of dependent origination. There's a noting, with this as memory, there's this kind of a sense of self arises. I see. And then you notice that with the noticing of that arising, you begin to have a distance on a whole sense of self and suffering is created, and there's a cessation of the sense of self. Not cessation of conscious, you're like, you're not unconscious, but the whole sense of a ego personality being born into the mind. All of a sudden that ceases, because what the structure is seeing, that's just conditionality. That's all it is. It's not who I really am. With this as condition, that arises. With this as ceasing of that, that ceases. So begin to see that, And you begin to see how the sense of self dies through memory, you know, as it arises through memory, you see how it dies, or ceases, better ceases in the mind. Not C-S-I-S. It ceases in the mind. It ends in the mind. And this is a very, you know, the Buddha, this is in the Buddha's teaching, this is what we try in observing stream of consciousness. This, what we call dependent origination, is what the Buddha suggested we perceive, rather than always perceive as a sense of ego and self. I'm a good person, you know, always this constant creation of a sense of self. So let's say if someone is very much into self-disparagement, say, okay, and it's a very, very bad habit, and they're very self-critical all the time for whatever reason, from childhood, whatever. And you can see how that self-criticism gets triggered by something, gets triggered by some memory, by some event. And if the person always just believes in that, then they're caught. They're caught in self-disparagement. So something happens, oh, there you go, you did it wrong, and they're just kind of hating themselves all the time. So this is a very liberating principle in that sense. So the person begins to look at it, a different kind of a perception, and sees, oh, with this kind, let's say the person is very self-critical, and whenever they break anything, say, or they do something which they perceive as being wrong, they just get down on themselves all the time. Oh, idiot, why did you do that? I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't be like that. They begin to try to look at that series of conscious events as phenomenon in the mind, as things that can be observed. They're not absolute truths. They're things that can be observed. They come and go. They change according to causes and conditions. And the person sees, oh, with broken, let's say the person drops the dishes on the floor, crash all over the floor, and then there's the first arising of thought, oh, you idiot, how could you be so sloppy? And the person actually sees that with broken dishes on the floor as condition, there is this sense of self arising. When a person actually sees that and actually sees, oh, there's no ultimate truth in that, that's just a phenomenon, it's just a thought, it's just an emotion, strongly conditioned maybe, yeah, that's all it is. And there's a sense of that ceases because one no longer believes in it. One sees it as a movement. So this the basic principle of with this as condition that arise, with this being that comes to be, is the sort of basic formulation, this being that comes to be. With the arising of this that arises. This not being, that does not come to be. With cessation of this that ceases. And that's the sort of basic formulation that the Buddha, the texts recommend we contemplate. And then it's recommended we look at a more specific set of experiences that we have until contemplated more deeply. And that focuses around the very simple fact that we are sense beings. We are we have sense consciousness, and including the mind. So we hear, and we smell, and we taste, and we have body feelings, we see, we have mental events that come and go. And that we live in a world, because we are sensitive in that sense, we're sensitive beings, we have sense consciousness, we are also subject to contact. And just part of being human, but we don't live in a ball of wool of cotton or something. We're always being contacted. We're like pin cushions. Right? So the deer fly bites me, or the ice cream tastes nice, or a memory comes up of something I did which was really beautiful, or a memory comes up of something which was really ugly, or my knee hurts, or... So sense experience is always happening, isn't it? Naturally. So with this as condition that arises, so with the sense basis as condition, there's in contact, there's the arising of feeling that because our senses are being contacted all the time, we feel things, we feel life, obviously. So we feel positive, negative, pleasure, pain, and neutrality. And that's a given. You can't get out of it, even if you want. It's just a given. And from that, the thing about sense consciousness is that it's both positive and negative. We have memories which come, which are very beautiful, and we have memories which are very maybe painful or difficult or negative. We hear sounds which are very sweet and melodious, and we hear sounds which are raucous and grating and loud and ugly. We taste things which are very delicious, and we taste things which are not delicious. We hear sounds, we smell odors, we feel bodily feelings. So the structure of being incarnate in a body is that we have the sense of what we call vedana. And vedana in English is usually translated as feeling, but it's specifically the sense of positive or negative that we have. So I'm like, I find this fan blowing to be attractive. It is an attractive feeling. If you put on a heater now in front of me, had a blow heater on me, I'd find that unattractive. I would be repelled by it because it would be too hot. So our sense data is set up that way, and it's a range of things, isn't it? It's like from the very, very positive to the very, very negative and everything in between. So there's a whole range of things, and that's obvious. Now, you can't really get out of that, you know, like pain. Physical pain is a necessary part of living. If you didn't have physical pain, you'd be in trouble. If you step on a nail, you wouldn't know it, right? So you're a necessary part of it. And from that as condition, from that natural sense experience, what you get is craving. And this is the real nub of where suffering arises, because craving is the tendency to favor the pleasant over the unpleasant, and that's natural enough. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong about favoring that, nothing wrong at all. But the trouble is, if you always favor the positive and negative, then what do you do with the negative? If you can never be at peace with the negative, what do you do with that? And so what we do is if we are ignorant or not really attentive to how consciousness works, we pursue the positive and try to minimize the negative. And we'll do that. You know, if you like herbal tea, you'll choose herbal tea. And if I like coffee, I'll choose coffee. So there's nothing wrong with that. But if that's the only strategy we have, you know, that's the only thing you got going, you're in trouble. Because it's not in our control. As much as you might be able to choose the herbal tea preference you have, there's a lot that's out of control. It's not in your control. The aging of the body, human relationships, the weather, da-da-da-da-da, economy, and so on. And the thing about, like, craving, the craving for pleasure and the craving not to have displeasure, is that that's what the word attachment is based upon. You know, the sense of being attached or grasping comes from that idea, comes from always trying to hold on to the pleasant and trying to get rid of the unpleasant. So let's say if you, let's take memory. Let's say if you were at work yesterday and one of your co-workers insulted you in a committee meeting, just kind of embarrassed you, right? And it was quite hurtful. Now, socially, you could say that's wrong according to company rules and so on. But having done that, you go home you'll be sitting in a chair and that memory will come up. That memory will be quite unpleasant because it was hurtful, it was embarrassing, it was unfair, let's say, it was unjust. And so with memory as condition, this being, that comes to be this feeling of painfulness. Now, if you're not mindful, then rather than just seeing the resultant of that, that this is just a conditioned phenomena, which is certainly unpleasant, no denying that. But if I'm not aware of that structure, then what happens is attachment takes place, and attachment and ego are very much the ideas that cause the suffering. So not only is there the memory of being humiliated by someone at a committee meeting, there's all the talking around that. It's not fair, and I'm going to get back at them, and it wasn't fair, and I shouldn't have done that, and I'm going to get them tomorrow, I'm going to tell the boss, and the mind can just obsess with that for hours. It's been really, really painful, very, very hurtful. And that's what we mean by attachment. And attachment in the whole sense of being this person who was hurt. And so positively it can be the other. Let's say you enjoy art maybe, and you go to a local gallery and you see a really nice oil there and you think, oh, that'd be really nice, I really like that. And then you come home and you have the memory of the nice oil painting. And then you think, oh, it would be really nice to get on that. I wonder how much it costs. Yeah, I have to tell, you know, who, and so I can get this, and blah, blah, blah. And the mind creates a kind of positive fantasy about owning this painting and what I'm going to have and so on, or taking a vacation to Thailand or going to the holy places, whatever. So it can be positive too. So with memory as condition, this being, that comes to me, this whole sense of fantasy about the future being pleasant and so on. Or with this as condition, maybe it's a negative thing. Aversion, resentment, and so on. And from these interactions, we get a sense of a self flowing onwards. And the Buddha's teaching is trying to show us that kind of constant involvement and sense experience will never liberate you. You'll never find the spiritual freedom that he's talking about, the transcendent understanding, from this enmeshment with this structural principle, this being that comes to be. But by applying that structural principle, you begin to see these are just phenomena in nature. They arise conditioned on because of causes and conditions, and they cease depending on causes and conditions. And that sense of perspective is the perspective when we talk about anicca dukkha anatta, and we talk about this is changing, it's uncertain, it's impersonal, don't grasp it, it's suffering. And that perspective or that perception, those perceptions are what Buddha is encouraging around our sense experience. And when we can apply those perceptions, then we begin to have some space around those, and we begin to incline towards that which is not dependent, that which is not dependently originated. It does not depend on memory. It does not depend on sense experience. And these are the ideas about enlightenment and nibbana. So as long as our attention is drawn by that which is dependently originated, if you get what I'm talking about here, then we're looking in the wrong place. It's like Nasruddin looking for a sweet chili pepper. He's eating his chili peppers and he's crying. Nasruddin, what are you looking for? I'm looking for a sweet one. Mm-hmm. It's like looking in the wrong place. So if we seek, we can seek sensual happiness in sense experience, certainly, and we do. You know, some people like sugar in their coffee and some like tea, and you know, so that's in the nature of things. But if we don't see the limitations of emotional life, of social life, of intimate life, of art, of music, of the health of the body, if we don't see these are limited conditions. They can certainly be happy at times, and they can be social structures can be peaceful at times, but often they're not, because it's not in their nature to be stable or not stable. They're dependently originated. They depend on causes and conditions. And taking that principle and applying it is very much the Buddhist way of learning to apply perceptions which are skillful to our conscious experience, rather than just being habituated to perceptions which are unskillful. So let's say that I've had this very embarrassing committee meeting in the morning, and I've been humiliated and so on. And then I go back home and I'm sitting in my chair, whether I'm meditating or not, it's going to come up, right? So if I can see with that memory as condition, there's this sense of anger and rage. Then I see, oh yeah, that's causally structured. And I begin to see that which knows that is not causally structured. Not in the same way. It's not that way. Because there's a knowing of this dependently originating, changing structure. And once one applies that principle, then one can make choices which don't re-enmesh you in this world of suffering. So the feeling of betrayal comes up, or the feeling of loss or whatever. Ah, with this being that comes to be, with the arising of this that arises. And then this ceasing, that ceases. And you can say, well, so what in that is suffering? What in that is suffering? And the suffering is the identity with it, the attachment to it. And a very good experiment to do, like in this, and this is a teaching which you have to, it's not just being clever intellectually and kind of getting in your head, something you're trying to apply all the time. So if you take something like physical pain in meditation, it's a very good example of how to use this. So With contact as condition, there is feeling. So you have sense basis, you have contact. And your contact, let's say my left knee starts to hurt. So with contact as condition, there is feeling. And in this case, the feeling is painful, negative feeling, dukkha vedana. And with painful feeling as condition, there is craving, there is wanting to move, wondering when is the meditation going to stop, should I move, should I not move. And that's what you mean by attached, when I start to think through that idea in time. But if you take a little pain, not like an excruciating pain where you're crippled, but just take some sense of discomfort and see if you can sustain just a feeling of contact feeling rather than going to the craving, into thinking about the future. See if you can just be right at the point of this, like say, the physical pain. Where do you start thinking? Where is it just physical sensation? And where does it tip over into, I want to move, I don't want to be here anymore, I want to, how long is it sitting in? When does it tip over? When is it just feeling? And if you can, and that's quite a refined sense of attention that you need to do, but you'll find that it's actually okay. It's okay. And you'll know when to move when you have to move. But it's a very interesting way to, and a very safe way, because you're not going to hurt yourself. You don't have to sit there for 20 hours. But you begin to watch how this principle works. How does a sense of self arise? When you pay attention to something like physical sensation, and you're just with the physical sensation, just as it is, there's no sense of self there. It's not like you think, you know, there's just the experience of physicality. That's all it is. But the sense of self is the thinking mind. Me, what am I going to do? How long is this sitting going to last? Or not even being with the physical, just thinking about something else. But when pain arises in meditation, it's quite interesting because then, first of all, it keeps you in the present moment. It keeps bringing you back, like it or not. You might want to think about tomorrow, but you can't because your knee hurts. And then you have, well, should I move, should I not move, and so on. And that's a decision you have to make. But you can see how the sense of self arises right there and how the sense of time arises, how much more time. Maybe you look at the clock, how much more time. Oh, I don't know if I can last this. This is a long sitting or something. And then you go back and say, what it was with contact, feeling, craving. You say, oh, if this is condition, that arises. And you begin to just watch that. And that's really where you liberate the mind. Contact, feeling, craving, attachment. That's where you begin to really, really watch. And you begin to see, well, actually, that tipping over into worry or tipping over into future, how should I move? That's something I don't need to do. I can just notice right at that point of contact and feeling. Just be with that. And you find that quite often the sense of this is discomfort goes to neutrality. It's just physical sensation. And quite often it's not a problem. I think if you think about when we first started meditation, all of us, and it's first pain, you're out of there, right? You're shifting, you're just kind of like you're dancing some kind of break dance to get out of it, because the mind doesn't know how to be with discomfort. It's just reacts. Oh, I have to move. So with contact, there's feeling. With feeling, there's craving, and the craving moves me to move away from the posture. And then, you know, all of us have been practicing for some time. Then we begin to say, oh, that's just contact feeling. And the craving is there, but you begin to observe the craving. Ah. And you see, no sense of time gets born. No sense of self gets born. It's just that. It's just that. And the craving settles. And you're okay with discomfort. And that's the kind of taste when we talk about the transcendent of the Nibbana or the deathless. That ability to be with unfulfilled craving, know it, and watch it cease. Watch its cessation, watch its end. Not in a way where we hurt ourselves. You know, that's not, you're not required to just hurt, so it doesn't work. But just in this way of feeling discomfort, so discomfort's this way. It arises because of these causes. And if you're really with it, you see it ceases. Or the value judgment around it ceases. And if one can apply that principle in very functional ways, like a bit of discomfort, that's why meditation is very, very helpful. It's not just because it can be calming in the mind, but it's a great laboratory. It really is a good laboratory to understand your mind in these very, very simple ways. So if you kind of observe that principle operating, then when life gets a bit more crazy, more complicated, when the emotional upheaval for some event, like maybe being humiliated in a committee meeting or something like that, much more powerful. It's the same principle. So you begin to, you know, you go back home in the evening, there's the memory of this turkey who insulted you or something comes up into mind. Ah, and you see, that's just memory. That's all it is. With this as condition, that arises. And you see the sense of that's not right. That, you know, it's this self-righteousness. They can't do that to me. And you see that they both come and go together. And in the seeing of that, you see that they also cease. With arising, you see ceasing. You begin to notice that. Ah, that's where freedom lies. It doesn't lie in not having terrible memories. It doesn't lie in having always pleasant memories, because that's not life, or pleasant experiences. It lies in knowing this, that sense consciousness operates that way, and that which knows the changing nature of sense consciousness, this dependently origin nature of sense consciousness, that's where the freedom lies. And so you're able more and more just to be with the ugliness of life, with the ugliness of memory, with the difficulty of an aging body, or with sickness, or difficult relationships, or, you know, whatever it is, whatever losses we have. But also, there's much more space for appreciating beauty and refinement and joy, because it's not a demand anymore. It's not a demand that the life always be refined and joyful and harmonious and pleasant. It's actually seen that those are lovely when they come. And so the mind moves more and more towards gratitude and patience. You know, when you begin to see that the conditionality of things, and you begin to see that really some of it you can do something about, but a lot of it is bigger than you, when it all comes together, you're much more grateful. And as Ajahn Smedo, and I always talk about this, he'd often say to me when everything came together at the monastery, he says, "Virdhamo, this is a peak moment." And it was very helpful, because it made me appreciate it more, but also it was a peak. And that at the sense level, at the level of social interaction, of a level of social beings and family and all of that, because there are so many other causes and conditions, you don't know. So when it comes together, you're grateful. But when it falls apart, you say, "Oh, that's the way it's supposed to be." With this as condition, that arises, with this being that. And when that ceases, so something happens and there's disharmony. When harmony changes to disharmony, you say, "Well, yeah, it's supposed to be." Harmony can't. It's not permanent, it's conditioned. It's dependent on causes and conditions. But my heart doesn't have to react. Now, and that's when we talk about attachment. Like if I'm attached to harmony, right, I think that that part of the scale is the only part of the scale that I'm going to participate in. What about the other part? What am I going to do with that? And I begin to see, yeah, that's the duality, harmony and disharmony. But the awareness of that change is not, it's not a duality. Awareness isn't a duality. It's not hot or cold, big or small. You know, it's different. It's a different whole perspective on it. And so that when we can develop this structural principle, this being that comes to be, with the arising of this that arises, this not being that does not come to be, cessation does that cease. If you can apply that, that's the way Buddhism disengages from the whole ego sense. Because if you know, sometimes in Buddhism we say a not-self. And that sounds like an absolute statement. That like sometimes in a Buddhist misrepresentation of Buddhism would be that there is no self. And that would be a misrepresentation, because the way the teaching is saying that the body is not self. Feelings are not self. Perceptions are not self. Mental formations are not self. Consciousness is not self. Right? So it's saying that these, like our bodily feelings, our perceptions, our memories, these are causally conditioned things in nature. They come and they go. And then there's that which knows the coming and going. So if you had no alternative, like to the anatta teaching, if you only had anatta and you didn't have dependent origination, say, yeah, but, I mean, the knee still hurts. You might say it's not self, but boy, it really hurt yesterday. It sounds like gobbledygook. But if you begin to see this dependently originated structure, you say, oh, yeah, with sitting for 2 hours, the knee hurts. With this condition, that arises. With this, so really look like take a look at memory. How memory is very important to understand. Look at you get some. Let's say you just have a run-in with someone. No big deal. You know, they just kind of tweak you the wrong way in the morning. And then that memory comes up, right? And then there's the sense of self, that, you know, that sense of me and being resentful of that person. And then you say, oh, if this is conditioned, that arises. Oh, yeah, this being, that comes to be. And as soon as you see that structure, it tends to fall away. If it has a lot of emotional power, it certainly reverberates through consciousness and you have to bear with the physicality of it. But the whole sense of rising of a sense of self and the ceasing of a sense of self, you begin to notice that that's just an object. There's no fixed reality there. I'm not a fixed angry person or a fixed frightened person or a fixed set of memories. They're memories that come and go. And you begin to have, you understand what liberation is about. It's not liberation from being incarnate in a sense body. That's just part of the learn. That's actually the laboratory where we learn. And sometimes the word transcendence sounds like you kind of get out of it all, right? You get enlightened and then you don't get old. No, sorry. You still, you know, you're still going to get arthritis. Ajahn Chah still had, was paralyzed for 10 years. But getting out of it is more knowing it as natural phenomena that come and go. And finding that in that witnessing consciousness, which is aware of dependent origination, which is aware of change, which is aware of anicca, dukkha, anatta, that's where the liberation finds. That's where the transcendence. So, practically speaking, you can see, I have a memory in the morning of someone who was really nasty to me at the committee meeting. In the evening, that memory comes up. With it comes up the resentments around that person. They're one piece. And transcendence is, it's just an object. And it ceases. It might come up again, and it ceases. It comes up again. However many times, you just, oh yeah, that's with this as condition, that comes to be. This being, that comes to be. And as you see that, you begin to abide more with the awareness, with the witnessing, rather than with the emotions, with the phenomena, with the personal history, with the resentments. And you begin to find freedom. And that's transcendent. You know, that's transcendent in the sense you're not getting out of anything. You still have memories and so on, but you begin to see that which is reliable and that which is unreliable. Like awareness of change, of dependent origin, that's reliable because that's the way nature is. It's not, you know, it's not hocus pocus or something you have to believe in. It's just very, very natural. It's a natural phenomenon. And you start to live with nature, the way things are. And this is Dhamma. You know, this is what we mean by Dhamma. It's a natural phenomena coming and going. So, you know, like in meditation, say, if you get like, the thing about learning about the mind is those bits of discomfort you have in consciousness, which are not overwhelming, that's where you learn. You don't learn with the overwhelming stuff. You survive it or you don't, right? But it's the little bits, the annoying bits, the slightly perturbing bits, right? Where you have enough mindfulness. You're conscious enough to know with this as condition that arises. You start to apply that principle. And that principle begins to be the perception that plays out in ordinary life. Perceptions. The glass is half full, the glass is half empty, right? We can perceive life in all kinds of ways. So perception is very important. So applying the perception of dependent origination, this being that comes to be. In the beginning, that's not a perception you're used to. The perception we're used to is, oh, I'm a hopeless person. Oh, I did that again. Or, oh, they did that to me. Or, I'm fed up with work. Or I'm hopeless. Or, I'm the greatest thing since butter toast. Or whatever you want, right? And that's all kind of self-perceptions, which are very, very strong. But now, the teaching is asking us, well, can you try another perception? Try another perception. So it's not like a belief. It's like an interpretation. This being that comes to be. With the arising of that arises. This not being, that does not come to be. Ceasing this, that's it. And you begin to mull that over. You bring it into your perceptual processes in areas where it's possible. So you have the memory of the person who insulted you, and in the beginning you just get lost in it. You just obsess with it. You know, you kind of, I'm so angry. And then, with this as condition, that arise. You begin to see that. You begin to apply that principle. And it's a liberating principle. Because that's what takes the sting out of the whole ego consciousness. It doesn't mean that you don't experience sensual life, you still do. But the whole sense of attachment and grasping and ownership of that's it's like the tweezers which take that out of and that we would call right view, right understanding. right seeing, right perspective, right perception, in a way, not as absolute truth or dogmatic truth, but as a way that if you apply that perception, it leads to liberation. So it's not a belief, something you have to apply. And the thing about this teaching is something which you have to apply. You can't just leave it as a dogma which you believe in. I believe in suffering and the end of suffering. So what? Do you suffer? Right? Can you get beyond it? That's the challenge. So it's a teaching which is very alive in that way, alive in contemplation, alive in the application of perceptions. You know, it's very alive that way. And so consider that. Consider this structural principle, and see if you can apply that. See if you can apply this perception as opposed to ego perceptions. See how they might be introduced into the way you're interpreting life. And the more you do it, the more that becomes a natural interpretation rather than the ego interpretation, which dominates us in the beginning and is a great source of suffering. Okay, I'll leave that for your reflection.
Andamayam dhammakataya sadhukaram vadamase
sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
We'll have a non-residential retreat from, I think, the 15th of September for a week. So non-residential.